Shalom Aleichem. I have two daughters who are both Talmidos in Benos Yaakov. So we've heard about the mythical Rabbi Schiffenbauer up to the point that I started to doubt that this person wasn't a Moshe Ba'alma, because it's hard to believe that one fellow is able to accomplish what they all seem to say Rabbi Schiffenbauer said, Rabbi Schiffenbauer taught him, Rabbi Schiffenbauer disagrees with you. It's unbelievable, the number of Rabbi Schiffenbauer quotes that run around the house. Okay, apparently you guys all exist, and so do the fish, so I'll tell you what they know about them. So one of the Gevaldika things about fish is that it's very, very simple when you actually know what you're supposed to be doing. Very, very simple to know what's kosher, what isn't kosher, everything very, very simple. And every so often I get phone calls at work, people want to know, this is fish kosher, that's fish kosher. It's such a bad question that it just doesn't even pay to answer. I'll explain to you what you need to know, how to figure things out for yourself, and you realize for yourself there's no point in even asking the question. But the problem is, like a lot of things in life that are very, very simple, people come in with wrong hanachas. They come in and they imagine they know this and that or the other thing, they put it all together and they come out with a jumble of God knows what, right? So if I would ask you, imagine a guy needs to deal with a Yerideya Shaila, because a Shaila of a non-kosher fish is a Shaila in Yerideya, 7 Pei Gimel, yeah? I tell you, how does a guy decide how to paskin Yerideya Shailas? If I tell you, paskin Yerideya Shailas are the English side of a Chumash, you probably wouldn't look up to that guy as being the kind of guy you'd want to associate with, right? And yet, if I would tell you the number of times I've been confronted with somebody who paskin that something was mutter or aser because of a confluence of either the English side of the Chumash told himself, or he looked it up on the internet. And I'm not joking, I had one today where a guy called me up to certain things. This part he's not asking because he already knows because he looked it up on the internet. And the other part he wanted to know. You would think, if you're wasting my time anyways, you got me on the phone, you might as well ask the whole thing. No? Imagine you go to your account and you say, listen, I filled out most of the return. There's just one line I have, the smallest drop is cash for it. I'm going to pay you your full fee anyways. Just answer me this one line and then sign it and we'll call it a day. Right? Say, guys, I'm shook of tight. So what is the deal? So what does it say in Chumash? Chumash describes kosher fish as having two things. Snapper v'kaskasas. What's the mistake? The mistake is that people go to the English side of the Chumash because they don't know what a snapper v'kaskasas is. And you can't blame them, because Gemara Chulin also wasn't sure what a snapper v'kaskasas was. It took a whole Amud of Gemara in order to figure it out. But what do? They go to the English side and it says, oh, fins and scales. They say, gevaldik. So all the guy does is Google, does so-and-so fish have fins and scales? He comes back with some kind of a hit that says something about yes. Or some non-Jew who wrote up a list of kosher fish, who said that in his mind this is good enough. It's a gevaldik. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could go to a non-Jewish expert for. Paskening your Yerideya Shailas, not the way you'd want to go. Yeah? But yet the non-Jewish fellow wrote a list of fish that in his mind were kosher. His rules of how he decided what's kosher, what's not kosher, very interesting, but it has nothing to do with Shulchan Aruch. Mamish nothing. Mamish nothing. I know what the basis behind his list was. It was absolutely nothing. And the guy tells me he knows this part is kosher. Why? Because in the English side it says fins and scales. Kosher fish have fins and scales. And it couldn't be the farthest thing from the truth as far as what a kosher fish is. Why? So let's go from the beginning. First of all, we're going to take fins off the table. We're not going to talk about fins anymore. Why? Because the Gemara tells us, including Das Amud Vav, that every fish which has kaskasas is going to have snapper. So the snapper, which they translate as fins, is not negeh lamaisa. Because we're dealing with lamaisa. When you're dealing with the Olam Alamdish, there's a clear. But we're dealing with a dead fish on the table. We want to know, can I eat this dead fish? Fins are not nogeya, because we believe in Chazal, and once Chazal told us that every fish which has kaskasas has snapper, so all we need to know is, does it have kaskasas? Halacha l'maisa, does it have kaskasas? And now what's a kaskasas? Right? So if snapper was the fins, so kaskasas gotta be scales, right? So any fish that's got scales must be kosher. And that's not true. It's not even close to true. There's lots of fish that have scales that are not kosher. Many species of shark have scales. They have placoid scales. They have fins and scales, and they are not kosher. Now, how could that be? Because kaskasas isn't exactly a scale. It's a scale with a twist. Yeah? The Ramban and Chumash tells us exactly what a kaskasas is. A kaskasas is a scale that you can remove from the fish without ripping the skin. So for those chavra with very, very short attention spans, take that, go with a little click, and then space out for the rest, because that's really the most important thing. A kosher fish has scales that you can remove and not rip the skin. Sharks, for example, that have placoid scales, their scales make up the skin. Yeah? Kind of like clicks. Remember the kids had clicks, right? And they snap together? So when a shark grows, right, those scales are locked in block with each other, right? There's only a certain amount that it grows that it can stretch before it's got a problem. Right? So as the shark grows, how's it going to continue filling out? Okay, so what happens is each new scale grows beneath the link between the previous two, and as it stretches, 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 it stretches enough for the one underneath to pop into place and fill the gap. Those scales are the skin. You can't remove the scales and leave the skin behind, because those are the skin. There are certain species of eel that have subcutaneous scales. Subcutaneous means underneath the skin. Vithert has fins and scales, and it is 100% glottrae. Because fins and scales is an initiative state in Torah. Torah says, snap the kaskeses, that means scales that you can remove without ripping the skin, and we don't care about the fins, because Chazal told us everything with kaskeses is snap. So people say, why did the pasuk have to say snap it with kaskeses if kaskeses is the whole thing? So the Gemara asked that question, the Gemara answers, yagdo Torah v'yadir, to make the Torah great and glorious. What that means is a very long conversation in the Achronim. I'll tell you where to look if you really want to see. L'maisa, all we're going to talk about is whether a fish has kaskeses on it. Fair enough? Okay. So a kaskes is going to be a scale that comes out of the fish and doesn't rip the skin. Now, every so often I get a phone call from a guy who's fishing, right? Why am I getting a phone call from a guy who's fishing? Because he probably doesn't have access to the internet, like where he is, because he can't Google it. So he's got to call me, never. So he wants to know, how do I know if this, I got a fish in front of me, I want to know if it's kosher. Very simple process. We've explained this to second graders. They were amazingly good at it. Right? How many Yerdei HaShas would you give a second grader to Paskin for you? Hopefully not many. I really hope. Not many. This one is that easy. You ready? The scales on a fish are aligned in such a way that towards the front they're going to be connected, towards the back they're loose. Yeah? Like this. So if you can imagine like the doors on your car. Right? On the driver's side, it's going to open up with your left hand and swing out this way. On the passenger side, it's going to open up with your right hand and swing out that way. Exactly the same, and for the same reason. Because over there, it's aerodynamics, here it's hydrodynamics, but it's the same idea. If a car is going forward, right, and you'd have the hinge on the other end, as the car is going forward, the wind would come in, get in between the gap, and yank that sucker right off the hinges and hits the guy behind you. Right? So that's why they don't do that. Because most people like the door to stay right there on the car, so they put the hinges in the front. And the fish got smart too, and they put their fins in the front. Yeah, they evolved over 10 gajillion years to have their scale in the front. Okay. So the bottom line is, if this had fins, they'd be right here. These are going to be its pectoral fins. If you ever see pictures of the biology of the fish, when they show you the anatomy of the fish, they show you pictures of the fins. They usually go with the dorsal fin over the back. Rashi in the Mishnah in Nida seems to refer to the pectoral fins. He says, "Husha shapahem," the ones he's using for swimming. The pectoral fins are the ones used for swimming. The dorsal fin is for direction, like a sail. Fish has got pectoral fins, got a dorsal fin, it's got a tail fin, it's got an anal fin, an anterior dorsal fin. Sometimes they even got fins on the belly side. L'chare, anyone would be good enough. There isn't a whole lot of talk about it in the Rishonim. You know why? Because none of the Gala Maisa. So the bottom line is now you got to find the scales in the sucker. This fish was cleaned. So I once had a fight with a fellow in another supermarket that I'm telling him I'm buying fish because I'm going to give a presentation on it. I'm going to remove the scales. He said, "Oh, I scaled it already." I said, "All right, I tell you what. Give me $1 for every scale I can pull off of your cleaned fish." He said, "I cleaned it. There's no scales left on it." I said, "All right, give me $1 a piece. You mask him? You want to talk about an asmachta? I'd probably pull off more than his salary just on one fish." Yeah? Because what happens when a guy scales a fish? Guy scales a fish, he takes all the scales off the middle. See how nicely my finger wiggles all around over there? Because this part is completely clean. Because this is where the people eat. So that's where they bother to scale it. What they don't scale is over here by the tail. There's like 10 jillion scales. On the underside of the tail, you're going to find a bunch. Oops, sorry about that. On the underside of the scale, you'll find a bunch. Behind the gills, over here, you pull a couple more off. Along the belly flap a lot of times, this thin layer over here, a bunch more over here. Bottom line is, even this clean fish, which has no scales on it, a few hundred still left on. Doesn't take much to find them. One scale, pulled it off, didn't rip the skin, it's kosher fish. Ta-da! Magic. Very simple, no? Is there any point in calling my office? No. So if I get nothing else out of this presentation, there's another 50 gentlemen in Flatbush who are not going to be calling me on their boat, wanting to know if the fish that's wiggling around over here, "I got the fish on the edge of the hook, what's the story over here? Can I throw it out? Can I eat it? What?" Push it. Pull the scale, comes out, didn't rip the skin, kosher fish. So far, so good? Okay, so that's the easy part. But not everything in life is so easy. Most people, when they go fishing, want to go fishing for things that are much more interesting. This is a porky. Very cheap fish, not very tasty. Apparently, they used to be very popular. Sheepshead Bay, for those people who are into history, Sheepshead Bay is named after the Sheepshead Porgy. Sheepshead Porgies used to be the most popular fish found in Sheepshead Bay. It was named after the porky that used to fish out of there. You will not find any Sheepshead Porgies left in Sheepshead Bay. Apparently, it was good enough eating There aren't any left. Either that or they all moved to Florida like everybody else. Don't know. Bottom line is, you'll find the Sheepshead Porgies in Sheepshead Bay. So now they should call it Garbage Bay, I guess, because that's what you find in Sheepshead Bay. This is a trout. Trout is one of those fish that's perfect when you know what you're doing and very difficult when you don't know what you're doing. What do I mean? Trout have very tiny scales. Very tiny scales. Because of that, they never bother to scale the trout. They never bother. The scales are small. They don't get all over the place. They're not going to get in your food. You can cook it like this with the scales still attached. Doesn't scare anybody. Which means the guy at the fish store isn't going to bother with scraping the scales off. Because you as a customer aren't going to bother. You're not going to care about it. You're not going to have tinas on him. Why are there still scales on a fish? Right? Which means as a kosher customer, when you're in the middle of nowhere and you're trying to find fish and everything has got the skin off, we're going to talk about that shortly. When the skin's off, obviously, the scales are off. Now you're in trouble. But you're usually able to find trout. In most places, they'll have whole trout. And if you have a whole trout, you can be waiting to get yourself. Yeah? So again, same procedure. You're going to scratch with your fingernail from the back towards the front. Now I'm going to scratch it roughly so you can just see what I'm talking about. So everybody see those lines that I made with my fingernail? Those are scales that are popping up. And since this thing is Molly Vigodish scales all over my fingernail, it's very easy to yank scales off. Skin did not rip. So he says, how do I know if the skin ripped or not? It's very simple. If it ripped, it looks like this. That's the meat inside the fish. So if it still looks like skin on the outside, you're good to go. Ripping skin is a pretty violent procedure. You ever try to cut the skin when it's raw? You're ripping, you're tearing, even with a decent knife? Not so simple. So you're not going to accidentally rip the skin. You understand? So bottom line is you scratched it, the scales came off, the kosher fish. So far so good. The problem is that the scales are very small. So people started, I don't know. I know what the scales look like on the salmon. I know what they look like on carp. Carp's got big, fat scales, bigger than your thumbnail. Yeah? So these got little tiny tchotchkes. What is this? Does it even blibe a scale? Okay, so the halacha is that any scale, any color, any size, any shape is all the same. No difference. The only nafkamina would be if you have a scale that's so small that you can't see it with a naked eye, that would not be any good. Tiferes Yisrael talks about that, or Shulchan talks about that. Anything that you can't see with your naked eye doesn't exist, al pi halacha. So if it doesn't exist, then it's not going to be mat to your fish. This came up.
Water.
I'm sorry?
Except for bugs and water.
Except for bugs and water? Man, you got to be mashal me, right? Mechaim tovim mashal. Kitzer, if you can't see it with the naked eye, it's not there, it's not a problem. But short of that, it doesn't matter. There was a tshuva that I saw they sent to Rav Efrati to find out about a blue marlin. The blue marlin had white scales, some of them had blue scales, and they were square, and they didn't look like regular scales, and this guy's like, you know, flailing his arms up and down, and writes like an 8-page long tshuva explaining what the big deal is. Anytime you have to write an 8-page long tshuva to explain what the shaila is to a gadol, you know you already got a problem. And he writes back, you know, with a couple lines, I am Rambam, it says b'feirush, it doesn't matter the color, the shape, the size, anything else, have a good day. Yeah. Bottom line, very simple. Nothing to clarify about. The other fish that comes out like this is whiting. I once got a call from Mashgiach, who was doing a production in Mexico, and he told me right away, I'm not working for the OU. Okay, good. He went to work in Mexico. They extended his production by another week. So there was a limit to how much food you could schlep with you. So he brought enough, lasting, you know, a couple days past what they told him, but not an extra week's worth of food. So now he's stuck. And he's eating nothing but sardines and tuna, because that's all they got in the local supermarket. What is he supposed to do? So I told him, they have whiting. He said, rather they do. Why? Because whiting is similar to trout. Even though whiting would be frozen with the scales on. Trout, you rarely find frozen trout, whole trout frozen, very rare. But whiting, you do usually find. And pretty much anywhere I've been where they asked me to give a presentation to a local community, that's one of the things I would go for to prove that you can get kosher fish anywhere, even when they don't have a kosher fish store. Yeah, not a big deal. Okay? Trout. Next. A lot of stores want to sell something like this. This is a piece of tilapia. Something very special going on. This is a piece of skin. This is the meat. There's the skin. Now you notice how thick the skin is on the tilapia? I can't tell you how thick it is, but I would say at least as thick as a sheet of paper, maybe thicker. It's a decent sized skin. You're not going to rip that, and it's rubbery. You're not going to rip that without noticing. Tilapia skins are so thick that they use them for making gelatin. There's enough collagen inside of them to make good fish gelatin. And when you see fish gelatin somewhere, it's usually made out of tilapia skins because they're cheap and easily available. Tilapia skins. So why did somebody do something like this? Skin's gone, except this piece over here.
It's a symbol.
So I was once giving this as a presentation at a shul, and a fellow came up to me afterwards and said, you know, I want to tell you, I always wondered about that, and I just imagined that the guy in the fish store was so lazy that he just couldn't take off that last piece of skin, and now it makes a lot of sense why the guy left the skin. This piece of fish was made in Colombia, not South Carolina, and not Washington, the other Colombia. Yeah, he might have had some blow during his day. But the meanwhile, this piece of fish was born and raised in Colombia. Tough in the accent? This fish never saw a numel until he landed in U.S. waters, which means when he got opened up inside a ShopRite, the fellow inside a ShopRite was boidic this fish to see if it's a dog tar. So how did he pull that off? Oh, it's very simple. He has a patch of skin sitting right there. With this patch of skin, he can tell this is a tilapia. Now, the truth is that Mark probably never removed the scales from this fish, and it's still fine. Why? First of all, because Mark wasn't responsible for it, because this is the stuff that they have packed by an okay outside place. Some of the stuff is packed in ShopRite, that's under Rabbi Beck. Mark is the guy who takes care of it, and the stuff that's in the okay is made at an outside warehouse, and they bring it in pre-wrapped. The idea was that they could do it faster and cheaper if they do it in an off-site place, and the okay said we're only masked to do that if you leave a patch of skin on every single piece of fish. Okay, it's a nice hitter, I like that. So they leave a patch of skin on it. With this patch of skin, even if there's no scales on it, I can still know if it's a dug tar. Yeah, you want to see me pull that out of my sleeve? I would, but it's all fishing, so I don't want to do that. So you want to hear this? How do you know this is a dug tar if it's got no scales on it? It's very simple. We're going to use a rule called Tvias Ayin. Way back when you were in fifth grade, and you learned Bat Metzia, right? You learn that you're able to know if some Metzia is yours, assuming that you're a Torah scholar. You were able to identify a Metzia with your Tvias Ayin. Right? Meaning you're able to look at it, recognize it, hey, I know what that is, that's my stuff, right? And if a person was the kind of guy who was going to be Medik Dayak and know for sure that he knows what he's talking about, he's allowed to rely on it. So the Darkei Tshuva brings down that you're allowed to rely on that Lamaisa when you're looking at fish. And how do we know that? Because the Gemara talks about a fish which is Asi L'Gadol Kaskases. It's going to grow scales. It's already Mutter. Rashi says, how could it be Mutter if it's going to grow scales? It doesn't have scales right now. So how did anybody know that this fish is going to grow scales? Now, if it was a hamish of fish, they would have pulled it out of the water and they would say, Hazuchtu, do you plan on growing scales before we kill you off? If we would let you live to adulthood, would you grow scales? Yes or no? And it's a hamish of fish, so you would sit, you have shmuz, you have some herring together, something like this. You know, you have a fishbrach. So the bottom line is, but they don't always fish for hamish of fish. So how are you going to know if it's got... So the doctor said, because it's going to grow scales because you can recognize with a Tvias Ayin by looking at the skin. You know what you're looking at. This is a tilapia. It's obvious that it's tilapia if you know what tilapia looks like. So you know that it's a tilapia. Now, there's a question that people want to talk about the base moish of kaskasa. You see over here the spot where the scales used to be on the skin? You can see that like scaly pattern. Okay, so relying on that is not so simple. Because sometimes a fish with subcutaneous scales, it'll look like the base moishav, like the scales used to be there, and they were never there, they're underneath. So if you don't know what you're looking at very carefully, it's the kind of thing you get messed up on. But if you know what tilapia is supposed to look like, you can look at this part and say it's tilapia. So then every so often you get a chacham who says, all right, what if I recognize the tilapia from this side? Without looking at the skin, I know it's tilapia. What's the halacha? The halacha is that he's wrong. He does not know the tilapia. Why is that? Chazal were goyzer against kirei dagim, literally fish guts. Now, they identify fish guts as being fish that can't be identified based on their samar. What was fish guts? In the good old days, they didn't have a good refrigeration technology. So in the Mela, you wouldn't have skinless fish or fillets or any other prepared fish products sent from overseas. Every fish was local, just like the news and politics. Everything is local, yeah? But one thing they were able to transport for long distances was fish oil and the gut that they made the kash the harsnag. That was the fish gut. That stuff would ferment, sit around, whatever it is, but it was able to last long periods of time. They put it on boats and shipped it distances. That would have been the only example of fish that didn't have the skin still attached to it that they'd be sending it overseas. Yeah? And the Gemara said that they were goyzer on it because they were afraid, the rabbis were afraid, that you might buy fish that wasn't kosher. If there was non-kosher fish, they also have guts. And somebody might be telling you non-kosher fish guts. So Mela, anytime you have the fish without the simanim on it, we look at that as kirei dagim. The problem is, kirei dagim should be a suffix d'oraisa also. We're not so clear. Maybe a Torah obligation to eating kosher fish. If the fish is non-kosher, right? So that's a Torah violation. Eating non-kosher fish is a Torah violation, right? So anytime I have a doubt about a Torah mitzvah, right? It should be a suffix d'oraisa. Why the rabbis have to forbid something that's already usher as a suffix derisive? You have a question? If it's a suffix derisive anyways, right? Why do you have to make it vada else to draw up on it? So I asked this question to Rosh Hashefter once. He told me, it's not a question, because you find other things like that also. Muscle, they made a gzeir against cholavakum. Right? What was the gzeir cholavakum? Is that we're afraid that when the Jew isn't there for the milking process, that they're going to milk a non-kosher animal and mix it into the milk. So if that would be a real concern, right? So it would be a suffix derisive, wouldn't it? It's a suffix that they have non-kosher milk mixed in. And you see that the Chazal created an iser called cholavakum because we weren't there to be sure. But that's what the case is. The Chazal asked fish with no skin. If it doesn't have simanim on it, it's awesome. Okay? So if you would buy a piece of tilapia, and it wouldn't have the skin on it, you would just see the bottom here, you wouldn't be able to rely on that to know for a fact it's tilapia. So every so often, a misnagid comes into the world. And a misnagid shagai calls me up and says, Rabbi, Rabbi, the government is very busy with these things. The government's got nothing better to do than to make sure that every yinuku who sells tilapia is really selling tilapia. Nobody's selling another fish calling it tilapia. It's funny you should say that, because the FDA, since 1994, I believe, has on its website an article about fish fraud, and they heartily recommend, this is the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, aka the government, the people responsible for these things, that a person should only buy fish from a guy he trusts. Because there's no way we could be on top of all the fraud that's going on out there. It's rampant to a level that would make you cry. And when we find out about it, it takes us 6 months to a year to get around to doing something about it anyways. So meanwhile, if you don't want to get frauded up, make sure you buy stuff from a guy you know and trust. This is the FDA's advice. There was a fish marketing group that was busy with fish fraud. So one great fraud that you can pull is you can buy another fish that's cheap and do a shini hashem on it. And rename it something that's much more expensive, right? So, Lisa, I once came into a presentation in Borough Park, and I brought a piece of catfish with me. Because every so often I try to buy non-kosher fish just to demonstrate it. It's not so obvious that a non-kosher fish is non-kosher. And a fellow from a local fish store, who self-admittedly had been working there his entire life until then, and was in his 40s, came in to listen to my presentations. Somebody's gonna come to my neighbor to talk about fish, let me in. So he came in. So I picked up a piece of catfish and I said, can you tell me what fish this is? He said, sure, that's a lemon sole. He said, lemon sole? How much you get for a pound for lemon sole? He goes, $15. Easy. That's what he's paying for the lemon sole, let alone what it's going out for. So okay, I paid $3.99 a pound. When I paid $3.99 a pound, it was catfish. Now, the good news is this was an Erlich guy, and he didn't think, you know, I just found myself a myriadic business to get into. Because you gotta watch what neighborhood you're in. So you're like, wait a minute. How often is somebody gonna know a thing like that, you know? Goldberg doesn't shop in my store, what am I worried about? Right? So, he kept to know that as a guy who's working the business, he thought he knew a lemon sole from the other end of the room, and he was, his mind, he never saw catfish before. He heard of it before. Like, those are the kurkavon? So you couldn't believe, that's a catfish? So that's all it was. It looks very similar to tilapia. Shape is a little bit different. Color is a little bit lighter, depending on how the fish is farmed, what garbage it ate. But the bottom line is, it's similar enough that an expert wasn't able to know the difference between a catfish and an lemon sole. I'm sorry?
He was not an expert.
Well, he considered himself an expert in the business. And
you can't be an expert if you only know one half of the half.
That's a fair point. What I mean to say is, if I would have asked you, can I trust a guy, an Erlich guy in the fish business, to tell me what it is? Right? Who are you going to trust? A guy who's selling the fish or a guy who's an independent third party who says, I'm sure I know what it is? Normally, if an independent third party looks at something and says, I'm sure I know what it is,
you're trusting here.
But the case is, this guy was 100% sure he knew what it was, and he was wrong. And Rebelski said that he had mice like that also. A guy was buying cases of fish by the Fulton Fish Market. Fulton Fish Market used to be located, believe it or not, on Fulton Street, Lower Manhattan, walking distance from my office. I know, because I went to go visit there at 3 in the morning whenever they opened, and bought some fish over there, Davin and Shakras by Wall Street, and then took the fish with me back to the office. The Fulton Fish Market used to be right there. What people used to do is the guy would go in, he would buy a case of fish, and he would bring it around the corner. There's a guy who would skin the fish for you. Because the guy's got a fish store. He's not interested in sitting there and skinning the fish one at a time. So you bring it to a guy, go get skin the fish for him. You go have a coffee. And half an hour later, you come back and pick up his cases of fish, pay the guy for his work, and walk away. So somebody noticed it, found out about it, told to Rebelski, and Rebelski went nuts on the guy. So the guy says, what do you mean? I know my fish. So he invited the guy down to the office and set him up with a stack of fish in front of him. He said, all right, call him out. You know what you're looking at, right? So tell me which one's which. Because the guy missed all of them. All of them. He had no idea what it was. What was he really relying on? That why is a guy going to take my fish and switch it for something else? Right? Which is an elk svara until you realize that there's economic fraud to be made by switching your good fish for my cheap fish. And Tosha says explicitly in Avodah Zarah that we are choshes for that. We're not choshes that a non-Jewish guy is going to switch your kosher fish for his trade fish and lose money. We're not choshes that he's going to do it just to stuff you. But if he's going to make money off of it, you have other he's going to do it. So how do you have a right to say, well, he loves me, he's my buddy, we've been in business together for 52 seconds, so Avadi's not going to swindle me. Not at all. Okay. Next. So the bottom line is, buying fish with a piece of skin on it, if you have a tefiyah zayin on it yourself, so then you have a tefiyah zayin, you know that it's lapier, you're good to go. If not, you have to be boydiket and find a scale on it. If you're going to buy this fish, you're relying on it that the okay took care of that problem. Wherever it was that they packed it, some Jewish person hopefully checked it out to make sure that it is. Although I'm aware that there are some places where they sell fish with a patch of skin, and they assume that the consumer is going to check it himself. It still has the simen on it, so you could check it yourself when you get home. Yeah? Just stick on that right. Because if the other guy doesn't know that he was supposed to check it, you kind of set him up to fail, no? There was a mice a few years ago, a certain consumer brand used to sell frozen tilapia with a patch of skin at the bottom. Why? Because they saved money, they didn't have to pay a mashgiach to fly to China where they were packing the stuff. They just left the piece of skin on.
With the hecture was
that you could check it yourself. So one time, a guy, they got lucky. It was the guy who found it. Found a piece of skin at the bottom of the bag and a piece of fish with no skin on it. So what happened? Realized the Goyim are doing this in the factory. They're doing 100 fish in a day, right? So they switch, okay, time for Jewish tilapia time. And that means the guy's supposed to, you know, stop the cut. If you look, there's like a deep cut in this spot where this. So he cuts in and then he skins out this way, right? So a guy made a mistake and he skinned the whole fish. He realized, done. So he cut the piece of fish, slapped it back on, and he was relying that the freezing process would put it back frozen. And apparently that worked for a good amount of time, or at least nobody found it until then who knew what was going on. So this Edelah fellow calls up the Rav Machshel, who was giving the Sashkacha, and the Rav Machshel says, "What do you mean? I told people that they have to check it themselves." He picks up the bag. So in the ingredients it says skin on tilapia. Why would I have made them write skin on tilapia? Because that you didn't follow? I'll say it so. It says skin on tilapia because of course everyone's going to read the ingredients when they buy a bag of fish and they're going to know that since it said in the ingredients skin on tilapia, that means you're supposed to take it home and get yourself an expertise in tilapia and be pointed to see if it's duck tar, otherwise you're eating a esophagus into your eyes. That's a perfectly reasonable spot.
It's a different texture, not texture though. Meaning what?
That's an excellent question, and now you know why we call it Rav Machshel, because bottom line is that's what his hashgacha was worth, and guess what? He's not in the business anymore. Anyhow. It's like a lot of things in life. It's a good business until somebody catches you.
Right.
So the bottom line is, if it's got a piece of skin on it, it's not a bad idea to make sure that you and the Rav Machshel are on the same page, that somebody else who knows what he's looking at check the fish for you. Not a bad idea. Anyhow, I brought a piece of flounder with the same thing. This is just damn interesting. Not Nogeta Kashas all that much, but very interesting scientifically. Now, both these pieces of fish are flounder. Oh, there's three here? There's three. Okay, it's Akasha. Watch this. Notice anything different about these two pieces of fish? Well, they both have skin.
One's darker,
one's lighter. They both came from the exact same fish in all likelihood. Now, how do you pull it off? Anyone go fishing for flounder, fluke, halibut? Yeah? You ever notice this? Okay, very interesting thing. You want to talk about how the age interferes with the world? Mom's amazing. When a flounder starts out in life, I wanted to get a whole flounder, I couldn't get it, and I didn't feel like schlepping to Avenue U to the non-kosher fish store. Flounder, when it starts off in life, it's small, swims normal like regular fish, straight ahead like this. At a certain point in development, it flops to the right.
That's something you can actually catch in the jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, okay, very good. Yes, actually, I was on one of those fishing boats. I bought a group, I had to go fishing with the guy, and then they go and parade around the boat when one guy in the boat catches something just to prove you could have, and you're the guy who couldn't figure out how to do it. Yes, but you're right, you can absolutely count if it's, what is it, 22 inches?
Yeah, it has to be
large.
Then you'll ever find.
Yeah, right. Like, you hit the jackpot if you actually got one big enough to save. We came home with sea robins and sharks. That's all we got. But anyhow, but yeah, you could theoretically come home with a big enough fish to eat, and you hit the jackpot because it's like $20 a pound. The good stuff. Big, wide fish. Yeah. Anyhow, when the fish starts out small, it swims normal like this. At one point, it rotates to the right. Now, the fish is swimming like this. Okay. Now, you realize it's got one eyeball on this side, one eyeball on this side, right? That's not very useful. Okay, so they actually made it that this eyeball on the bottom side migrates over the bridge of the nose and lands this way. It's very freaky. If you actually see the fish, you can see where the blind side, they call it, where the eyeball used to be. There's an eye socket, and then it meanders over onto the bridge of the nose like this. Now, the coloring of the fish also has to develop. See, because remember, this fish hasn't got a whole lot of natural defenses, and it's not part of NATO, which means that if somebody attacks you, you're on your own. Yeah? So now, if you're a fish and you're on your own, and you don't have a whole lot of weapon systems, the only thing you could do is hide. So the way they used to made it, watch this. It's got a beautiful green or brown or colored side and a white side. The white side is the bottom side, facing the bottom of the ocean. The dark side is facing up. If you are a predator and you are above the fish, you're looking down, right? You're seeing what looks like the ground. If you're a predator swimming underneath this fish, you're looking up and it looks like sunlight. And that's how they lived long enough for them to come here. Another interesting thing about this fish. Flounders are one of the only fish, things in the flounder family, called the flatfish family. You know why it's called flatfish? Because this is two ends together. Notice that they're pretty flat? Good. The reason that they're very interesting is that they have two different kinds of scales. On one side, they have, pulling it out, stenoid scales. Obviously, you can see that. I'm holding it up like this. They have stenoid scales. Stenoid scales are the kind of scales that are kind of squarish, but if you pull it out, it has what looks like a fan sitting on it. Those are called stenae, from the Latin word for combs, like on the combs of a brush. Called stenae. Those are stenoid scales. On the white side, they have the typical round scales that you usually see on fish. Those are called cycloid scales. Normally, a fish has one or the other. Nobody else has both. This guy's got both. All the miles this fellow has. Which is why we have to buy it every so often. You understand? And that's also why it's so expensive. Actually, this one was pretty cheap. I was surprised. If it wouldn't have had the skin, I wouldn't have believed that it really was. $9 a pound. Yeah, $9 a pound. It's got the skin on. Oh, you know what I love? There was a certain hashgacha, or lack thereof, that was telling people that the problem with the skin on fish was that they glue the patches of skin on the fish. And this hashgacha, I won't call him a hashgacha, this hashgacha was going around telling people that they are makbid to check every single piece of fish in boiling water to make sure that it's not glued on. Sounds very firm, right? Said they're absolute rishayim because they're either liars or they're ratzchim. Because as soon as you take a fish and dip it in boiling water, you brought it above critical temperature, you've exposed it to bacterial growth, and you're potentially killing your customers. So Marashach, either you killed his wallet because you lied to him and you didn't do what you said you did, or you actually did the rishis that you said you did, and you're a rasha because you're potentially killing people. Nice hashkacha, no? You have your choice of either the guy's lying straight up to you or he's trying to kill you. Anybody want to sign up for that one? Yeah.
Boiling actually improves bacterial growth.
If you bring it up above critical temperature, it definitely does. And they couldn't fully cook it.
I find it hard to believe bacteria live normally in boiling temperature.
So, we'll have a conversation about it later if you like.
Yeah. You can see the extremophiles do.
Bottom line is,
bacteria don't.
If you're in, let's say, a faraway country,
uh-huh.
Hungary. Let's say you're in a foreign country. You're
good.
In Hungary.
Uh-huh.
You're in a. They have these huge markets over there.
Yeah, open fish markets.
Open fish markets. You can buy any of these fish.
Anything with scales on it. Now, you know what, while we're on the topic, let's talk about it. But there's one problem. Let's say I'm biting the fish, I scratched it up, it's clearly got scales on it. You don't have to do it by yourself, by the way. So he says, ugh, I'm squeamish, I don't want to touch it. You don't have to touch it. You just need to know it has scales. So tell the guy to go like this. Tell him, pull out a scale and show it to you. He shows it to you, it's good to go. You have to also make sure that it came from this fish. This is a very nice problem. While I'm off the topic, I once gave a presentation at Turo, and I used the same fish in the morning. I actually spoke by Tiferes Yisrael, and then in the afternoon, I spoke by Turo. And when I spoke to Turo, I grabbed a bunch of fish, I went to the non-kosher fish store, threw them all in a bag, and when I came out to Turo, I talked about shark, and shark isn't kosher, and I pulled out the shark, and here's the scale of the shark. And I continued speaking. And frankly, there was one young lady who was actually paying attention, who said, wait a minute, you said sharks don't have scales, and I just saw you pull a scale off the shark. I said, Gavaldik, give this girl an A! She's the only one who's paying attention. I said, right, how did I pull a scale off the shark? She's in the statement. All right, take the A back. Push it. They were sitting in the bag together. The tzaddik and toivlish shcheinai. So you have to have a shtickle brains in your head. You can't just find a scale sitting on the thing. I can find a scale on my shvigah. She's not any more kosher. You know what I'm saying? The bottom line is, you find a scale on something and you're not sure that it came from this fish, it's not going to help you any. And if they're very loose and they're just scattered around the fish, it's not going to help you any either. You need to see that it was really coming from this fish. So like I do like this and I scratch it up, you could tell the scales came from this fish, not clear, right? But if you see a couple of loose scales here and there, you're not really sure, that's a push it that you could rely on them. Okay. Now, I go to the fish store, right? I go to not kosher fish store, I check the fish, it's Vadia Dugtar. But I have a problem, because most people who go to these fish stores aren't carrying a knife, a board, and all the other paraphernalia in order to cut the thing up. And you still want it to be kosher, not just in theory, but lemaisa when it hits your plate, right? Okay, so there's two things. First of all, assuming that it's a round fish. Round means that it's still got the guts. Yeah? This is a politician. Completely gutless, see? Actually, it's not really positive because it's clean too. But the bottom line is, let's say it was with the guts still inside. If you still have the guts inside, so now nothing happened to the fish so far. Okay? So now all you do is have the guy in the store wash the knife, not just with water. It's got to be with soap because it's greasy. It's not coming off with water. Okay? The question is, there's a question in the aquarium if washing with water makes it worse or not. Because water just spreads the oil, it doesn't remove it. You need something to break down the oils. Anyhow, but if you assuming that you got a guy who's with the program and he's willing to wash it with soap, he washes it with soap, he's got to either cover the board where he's covering it with or wash that well too, until it's clean. Not clean like when my little kid at home gets told, go clean your room, and he picks up the socks off the floor and he says, you see, I cleaned my room, right? But like clean, right? So assuming you cleaned it, you take a clean knife, you cut it, doesn't matter what kind of knife it is. Guy says, what if he used it to cut off God only knows? It doesn't matter because it's clean and cold. Clean, cold knife, doesn't matter, you don't have to worry about it. Okay, then you'd be fine. Unfortunately, most of the time when you go to the store, you will not find a round fish. Because when you leave the guts inside of the fish, it starts growing listeria. Listeria, the rotting process begins from the inside of the fish, which is why they remove the guts usually on the fishing vessel. Even though the guys in the fishing vessel are looking to get as many fish into the hold as they can, as quick as they can, sometimes, depending on the fish, they will gut the fish on the spot to remove the guts in order to keep it from rotting, keep it nice and fresh. Okay? So in that case, he's already cut it. Sometimes you buy a fillet, and it's usually the whole skin on, but it's a whole fillet, which means he cut the whole thing around. So there, you have to clean it afterwards. So now it doesn't matter what he did. If he washes his knife now, it's not going to help you any, because it's already cut up. You take it home. You wash it in non-hot water. Non-hot means below 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah? Warm water, cold water, whatever you like. Probably cold water is better. I don't know why people always want to use warm water. It's more convenient, but you don't really want the hot water stuff hanging out on your fish, whether you filter your water or not. Whatever rust and like disintegrated mobsters that hang around in the reservoir, you don't really want that hanging out. You know what I'm saying? Not cool. So you want to wash the fish, take a sharp, non-serrated knife, and scratch the entire spot wherever this non-kosher knife cut. Just scratch it. You're taking off a little bit. So guys, what do you need? You need a kedei netila or you need a kedei klipa? Neither. You need garbei paske, it's called. That's what it says in the Piskei Tshuva at the end of Tzadi Vav. You only need garbei paske, which means you're just scratching the spot where the knife went. Just gentle scratch. You're taking a little bit. Somebody says, why do you say gentle? He says, b'doichek, some lashon b'doichek. Because yeah, but he also says that you can't do a normal grayer because if you did grayer, then you'd make dog food out of it. So that means you put some pressure on there, enough to remove some of the lachlucha, some of the liquid mish that comes off. Then you wash the whole thing off. You're good to go. Would only be on the surface. And the garbei paske is going to remove that.
Just by scratching?
Gentle, medium scratch. You know, we're somewhere between petting your cat and meeting the missus. You know, the missing the trigger, I mean. You know, you want to find like some nice in between. You're in there, but you're not doing damage. We're not making gefilte fish. We're making, you know what I'm saying? Clear enough? That's what you're gonna do if you're gonna shopping. Now, I mentioned before that the rule is if you buy a piece of fish and it's got no skin on it, it's awesome. Right? You got that? The best thing when a guy drops a rule is to go for the exception to the rule. Yeah? I don't know about you guys, when my kid first started learning Gemara, everything I would say to him, learning up, well, what if this? What if that? Right? It's always, the first thing that a kid's mind is going to is, what? If that's the rule, I'm going to show you not. Right? Isn't that amazing? It can't just be my kid, right? So what's the rule not? So if I tell you that the rule is that fish with no skin are a problem, they're kirei dogim, so I got to tell you the exception to the rule. And that would be this. Salmon. Salmon is the exception to the rule. Now, why is salmon the exception? Well, it's simple. For those of you, when I picked this up, who knew what it was without reading the label, right? there were a couple of things that went through your head when I picked up this fish and you were trying to guess what it was, right? You might have noticed the color. The color is relatively distinctive. Not completely, but relatively distinctive. You also might recognize the flesh grain, right? Those white lines are the fat layers in between the flesh layers, the muscle tissue, right? Pretty distinctive. You're not going to find a non-kosher fish that looks like this. Yeah. I'm going to repeat what I just said because this is like the most misquoted thing that I ever said. The most misquoted. There is no non-kosher fish that looks like this. Yeah? Every so often I get a phone call. I did a presentation once in a certain city in New Jersey. And after speaking in a certain city in New Jersey, it's a big state, you have no idea where I went. After speaking in a certain city in New Jersey, I got a phone call that says, Rabbi Goldberg, you said that there's nothing that's red except for salmon. I said, nope, that's not what I said. He said, yeah, you said it. Listen, it was recorded. That is not what I said. And I know what I said, because I know people like you who are going to misquote me, that's what I said, and I'm always very careful to repeat myself at least twice, because some guy missed it the first time and heard what he wanted. There is no non-kosher fish that looks like this. Therefore, OU policy is, you can buy this without skin. Because there's nothing you could switch it for, that would be trade. So of course, why was the guy trying to catch me on the wording? Because he found this. Whoops. Still alive. Yeah? He found this. And I said to him, you know how mervidic you are? I brought this to the presentation too. This was part of my spiel. So you see, you weren't paying any attention. Just trying to slug me up. Okay? There's lots of other kosher fish that looks similar to salmon. It's not salmon. It's steelhead. Now,
what's it called?
Steelhead. Steelhead. Oh, you said steelhead trout. So you're a machria. I'll tell you what I mean. I got beat up for calling it steelhead trout because steelhead is a major machlekes if it's a salmon or a trout. Yeah? There's an omit. Now, if you think we argue about some arcane things in base medrash, where do you meet a fish guy and you say the word steelhead trout? I got caught on that one. Guy blasted me. How dare you think you're a bar hockey to decide it's a trout? What do you know about the biology difference between a trout and a salmon? I don't care. But what I love, I'm just leaving it off. This is what your salmon looks like on the backside. Okay? See that? Blue, gray, pink, whatever color you want to call it. That's trout. That's the salmon. Now, steelhead, depending on where you buy it, could also be called baby salmon or salmon trout, and it's all marketing. This one isn't even so bad. This is fairly similar, but not the same. Oops. Okay. Not the same. Now, the last time I did this, I bought another one. I bought the baby salmon. They didn't have officially baby salmon at ShopRite this time. And they had it at another store, but it was not fresh, and I was not buying it. But baby salmon is not salmon either. That's another major mistake. Baby salmon is not salmon. I repeat, baby salmon, not salmon. And I proved it. I had the same conversation. The kid was not believing me at all. So it's fine. I'll unwrap it. This one's pink. This one's blue, or reddish, pinkish. And this one is blue. Now, do you think that after a certain number of months, it's going to go from having pink skin to having blue skin? Masking, that's not likely to happen. It's not the same fish. Biologically, it's not the same fish. They come from the same mishpacha, but it's not the same fish. So the bottom line is, if a guy tells you baby salmon is salmon, it's close. It's also red, has a similar texture. The flesh grain is a little bit tighter. The muscle tissue is going to be tighter. The reason they called baby salmon was because trout didn't sell very well. Neither did Patagonian toothfish. Anyone here ever eat Patagonian toothfish? Yes, you have. You called it Chilean sea bass. That was another flash of marketing where somebody said, oh, that's gavaldic. We call it Patagonian toothfish. Toothfish? Doesn't sound very interesting. Sea bass. Ooh, I like bass. It's Chilean. Ooh, sounds exotic. You know why I call it Chilean sea bass, by the way? It's not quite off the coast of Chile either. It's quite closer to Antarctica than it is to Chile. Why I call it Chilean sea bass? Because that's the port of entry. The first time it hit dry land was in Chile, in many cases, because that was the closest country to the fishing grounds. So the Lumaita, they call it Chilean sea bass, but it has absolutely nothing to do with Chile. It's not even fished off Chile. A lot of it is illegally caught. And it's a black market fish, major black market fish. So if you're into it, make sure you're buying it from somebody who fishes ethically. Otherwise, you're supporting that kind of work.
Those are frozen.
Many times frozen. And there's other things you could do to doctor it up in order to make it weigh more than it really does. And if you really want to know, I'll tell you what is regularly happening in the fish market.
He should know because he buys it.
Oh.
Yeah, but they ripped me off.
$26 a pound you're paying for that stuff. Anyhow. This is herring. Herring is one of those fish that drop their scales when it comes out of the water. Yeah? Similar to certain species of tuna, skipjack especially, drop scales when it comes out of the water. And you can imagine that's a headache for cachas, right? Because if it's got no scales on it, how are you supposed to be boitiket that it's dug tough? Okay, so this is one of the cases where you have to rely on the tefias ayin. that somebody who knows what a herring's supposed to look like is able to look at it and say, I know what that is. That's herring. Yeah. So I'll tell you what happened by me personally. There's a, anyone there ever deal with Boston mackerel? Little small mackerels, about 1 pound. Anyhow, you see the smoked mackerel in the store? Okay. So Banner is a local fish place in Coney Island. They smoke mackerels, owned by a couple of guys. So I went to Banner once, one of the days when they were smoking mackerel, in order to get Messiah on mackerel. Because mackerel drop their scales when it comes out of the water. So you could sit there and scratch from today till tomorrow, you're not going to find anything. Yeah? It's kind of like the guys who buy those $5 scratch-off tickets. You could scratch from today till tomorrow, you're not going to get anything. But they keep doing it, right? Because people are stupid. Yeah. Let's say a lot of it is a tax on people that aren't so smart and not good at math. That's what you get for not being good at math. Yeah? If your likelihood is getting hit by lightning is higher than winning the lottery, and yet you go outside when it's raining, you know what I'm saying? You're not so worried about it happening to you? Think it through. Anyhow, so the bottom line is herring is one of those fish drop their scales when it comes out of the water. So now how are you supposed to know it's a duck tar? So you need a guy who knows that this is a kosher fish from his Messiah going back. So I went to Banner when they were smoking Boston mackerel one day while it was still raw. So Hill walked me around, and we picked it up, we looked at it together, he showed me some distinctive things to look for. So there you go. So now I know what a Boston mackerel is. Somebody hands me a Boston mackerel. I know. I can have PSI. I know what that is. That's a Boston mackerel.
Is there a fish that looks like the herring?
There is no kosher fish that looks like herring that's not in the same herring. There's no non-kosher fish that looks like herring either. Now, so this is a question. So if there would be a non-kosher fish that looked reasonably similar, then how could the Gemara tell us that we're allowed to rely that a fish is us of the Gadol Kaskasis? Again, we're assuming the Gemara didn't have Hamish a fish that would tell you Bepem Mully that they're kosher, right? So you had to guess on your own. When you're looking at it, all you got is what's dead in front of you. You hear what I'm saying? So bottom line is when you're going to buy a fish like herring, you're going to have to rely on somebody else's tvias ayin. Rebelsky of Shalom used to say that when they were kids, they used to get the herring in the jar and stuff. Sometimes they would suck the herring juice between their teeth because they didn't have, you know, like internet or stuff to entertain themselves. So they would suck the herring juice between their teeth, and every so often you get lucky, you found the herring scale. I don't know what you do with the herring scale. Maybe you like bounce it off a wall with the balls or something. I don't know. But the bottom line is, he said that every so often you get lucky. But it's not regularly happening. You can't rely on that. You need the tvias ayin. Okay? Herring lose their scales. Interesting enough that when herring lose their scales, I was once at a herring factory, and being a newbie, I was visiting the factory, and I said, all right, I need to see the fish. I need to pull scales off. So I'm scratching and scratching, and the lady is laughing and laughing. And, you know, come on. You know, there's nothing there. So that's when they let me know that, you know, by the way, you're not going to find any. So I said, so the boat's got to be a mess, no? So yeah, the bottom of the fishing vessel where they catch the fish is covered with the scales of the herring. So I says, what do you do with it? You sell it to animal feed or something? No. They have a much more valuable use for the scales of the herring. It's very interesting. You ever notice in makeup sometimes you get this like twinkly, you know,
glittery
effect?
Iridescence.
Yes. That iridescence comes from herring scales because the scales have that myla to them, but they don't have any skin attached to them. You know how I know? Because they fall off the fish and leave the skin behind. So they're nice and clean. So all they have to do is wash them and they don't have to remove the skin from them, which they normally would do on any other kind of scale. So maybe they use them in the cosmetics industry to make glittery makeups and stuff like that. So my favorite thing to do when they ask me to speak to boys that are about like fourth or fifth grade is to tell them this nugget of godless and then give them homework. Now you know how much fourth or fifth grade boys love to do homework, right? Remember, they live for homework. It's funny because I know that boys have done this homework even though I'm not even their Rebbe, right? I know they've done the homework because I've gotten the phone calls to my house afterwards. So here's your homework. I want you to go home tonight. I want you to see if mom is wearing makeup. If she is, I want you to go like this. It smells like herring. And just walk out of the room. And Mrs. Goldberg has more than once gotten a phone call. Why did your husband tell my son to tell me I smell like herring? If you weren't there, you don't have the godless of it. So, sorry, Mom. It's on you. There are other red fish beside this. So I showed you salmon. I showed you steelhead. There's baby salmon. This is, they call it salmon trout. There's Arctic char. There's a couple other fish of the same general salmon mishpacha. One of the other questions that comes up, and I can go till 9:15?
Whatever you want.
Okay. Oh, cool. I just want to make sure I'm not going over again. Like, I don't need anybody killing me that I missed something. Okay. Where's that? Anyhow.
Tuna, they keep the skin on also, right? Tuna.
No, tuna would be skinless.
Frozen tuna.
Oh, when you buy kosher frozen tuna in the Jewish stores, yeah. It's not so simple to get frozen tuna. I was just looking around ShopRite, I was just there this afternoon, and none of the brands of frozen tuna, none of them had skin on, because it's not normal. It's not normal for a few reasons. But the most important reason is that the skin is only going to be on the very outside layer of the loin. So the only way you're going to actually still have the skin on it is if you cut a quarter of, or you cut through a quarter loin and leave a stretch of skin, and then you got to give them the whole loin of the fish, which is not so convenient if you want to cut little 5 ounce nuggets and stuff. You want it from all of the fish. Anyhow, so there's a bunch of different fish from the same time mishpacha. One of the questions that comes up is that you ever notice that it says on farmed fish, farmed salmon, it says color added. Okay, people call up Pesach time and they start freaking out. Like, no one ever thought of this before, and I'm the one who's machadish. There's color added to the salmon, maybe it's chametz. Because how else would you turn something red except for smearing a piece of bread on it, right? How else would you get the salmon to turn red? It's gotta be chametz. So they call us up to ask, and I tell them it's not a problem. And they argue. And I always have this question. If you call up to ask a question, right, and a guy gives you the answer that's not the answer you were expecting, why are you arguing? You called up because you had a suffix, right? That means there was a tzad like this and a tzad like that. So I said the tzad like that. What do you have to disagree for? You have any evidence? No. You're just arguing. So what is that? I have a feeling if I ran a non-Jewish kashrus organization, I wouldn't have that problem.
No.
I'm just wondering.
I'm beyond the cops, course. They're trying to learn.
They want to learn by arguing. I got you. So the guy doesn't even ask me to explain myself. He just wants to tell me I'm wrong. Okay, so if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Very good. You know.
He's trying.
Wait, is that my shver?
More from you. Come on.
He's trying to teach.
Yeah. Yeah. Only a shver could get away with saying like toifa davar shat oisa. Right? Rashi wants to know how could it be? But you're machoes and Moshe like toifa davar shat oisa. Who would have the chutzpah to say a thing like that? Moshe Rabbeinu, whatever it is you're doing, it's no good. Who talks like that? So Rashi, what? Yeah? Whatever it is you're doing, Tadako, whatever you're doing, completely wrong. Now I'm going to set you straight, right? Anyhow, the red color that turns a fish red is not magic. Okay? It's not magic. The red color is a carotenoid. For those people who are not familiar with carotenoids, if I say beta carotene, sounds vaguely familiar? Yeah. That's the chemical that turns the fruits and vegetables and other yummy stuff that we eat red, orange, yellow, green, bright colors. All the bright colors coming from beta carotene, primarily beta carotene. That's the carotenoid that humans digest the best. Yeah? There's lots of different things in that same family. And salmon and other members of the salmonid family, the salmon mishpacha, yeah, they metabolize their carotenoids in a different way than fish outside of that family. The hainu. Those red colors that are fed to salmon that they have to declare on the label is because of the Code of Federal Regulations requires that if a finished product has a difference in color than it would have had without whatever ingredient it was fed while it was alive, you have to declare that on the label. Part of the Code of Federal Regulations. When the fish is alive, they add this artificial carotenoid to its feed. It's actually very expensive. It's derived from something called Fafia yeast, which I don't know if that does good for anybody, but they take an artificial version of the carotenoid it would have found in nature. How do they feed in the ocean? You don't feed wild fish, but you do feed farm fish. What we have on the table is farmed. I'll explain. Wild fish, their typical diet consists of a good amount of crustaceans, particularly shrimp and lobsters. Shrimp and lobsters in their exoskeletons, you know, the hard shell on the outside, have carotenoids, particularly astaxanthin, canxanthin, and zeaxanthin. Those are the three main ones that are in the exoskeletons of those. When the salmon eat them, they eat the whole thing. They don't have those fancy lobster knives to crack it open, so they just go through the solo fish, and then, you know, whatever they don't need goes out the other end. So meanwhile, the carotenoids stay in the body. Now, when they have extra carotenoids, those carotenoids are apparently their main reason biologically is to fight the free radicals and stuff and keep it from getting cancer and stuff like that. It's vitamin A. But the extras, what it doesn't need for daily life, it stores in the meat tissue. Humans do not store carotenoids in the meat tissue. Humans store carotenoids in the retina of the eye and in the skin, which is why if you ever are in the mood to have an artificial tanning pill, which is actually illegal, you're not allowed to sell artificial tanning pills, but you can sell skin supplements and show, you know, supple people that have a bronze color about them and just talk about how taking this skin supplement will cause you to look as beautiful as these people and let the consumer draw the conclusion himself. But basically they take pills of canxanthin, because that's the most metabolized by humans, and they put it in pill form, and if you eat it, you get an orangey color. Now, why a guy would think there's something cool about looking vaguely orange, I don't know. But somebody's buying this stuff, you know? It's like the guys who answer the Nigerian princes that are trying to give you $10 million. Somebody's answering the guy because he wouldn't do it for nothing. You understand? So you and I are laughing about it, and your spam filter is catching most of it, right? Somebody's giving the guy money, right? Somebody's buying this stuff, right? Well, salmon, when they eat this stuff normally, turns their meat red. Okay, so the problem is that farm salmon, they're not buying shrimp and lobster to feed farm salmon. So you gotta get that color into them some other way. Okay, so back in the 80s, when they first started fish farming, they didn't bother with the color. They just fed it whatever would make it grow the fastest, and the fish came out like a grayish color, and nobody wanted to buy it. Because most time when people would see grayish, whitish colored salmon, you would think that it's either diseased or bad, low quality, something like that. They weren't interested. So the salmon farmers got wise and said, we gotta come up with a way to turn it the right color. But they wouldn't want to feed it the expensive stuff. So the folks at the time, Hoffman LaRoche, which then became Roche Vitamins, which now became DSM, one of the largest vitamin manufacturers in the world, figured out a way to artificially derive this product from Fafia yeast, which was cheaper enough to grow that it was financially feasible. They take the stuff, they extract the canxanthin and astaxanthin from it, they concentrate it, and they feed it when it's a juvenile. In the smolt stages and in the fry stages, when it eats the stuff, it's able to metabolize, turn the meat nice, beautiful red. If they give it too late in development, it doesn't affect it at all. Interesting. Apparently 40% of the feed cost is this red color. Because even though the fish are able to metabolize it, it's not cheap to make it, it's not cheap to add it to the feed. But that's what you have to do if you want to have salmon that are, yeah, this beautiful red color. It didn't happen like this naturally. This is all artificial.
Why is wild more expensive than
the
farm?
Why is wild more? Oh, so one second. So that's the process of getting the farm salmon. Now, why is wild more expensive? Very simple, because it's harder to get. You can make wild salmon only 2 months of the year from Alaska, British Columbia. Sometimes you get it from Russia or Japan, but you're not going to really see that in North America. What you're seeing here is pretty much all from Alaska, sometimes from British Columbia, but it's coming up the Pacific. That's really all you're getting.
There's salmon from Chile here.
That's farmed. Farm salmon are typically made in Chile, in British Columbia as well, Maine, New Brunswick, again, the northern coast. You can get it from the Faroe Islands, you can get it from Greenland, you can get it from New Zealand, lots of places that can farm. All you need in order to get farm salmon is a good access to fresh water, to still water, and good access to running water, and be able to switch them at the right growth stage. So yeah, you can make that. So farm salmon, you know, people our age imagine salmon as a thing that was around, right? You had salmon. But if you think really, really back when you were a kid, you need salmon for dinner on a regular basis, right? Salmon was a thing that was for yontif, or it was a big deal. Because those of us who grew up, you know, in the 80s, in the early 90s, there was no salmon that was so bavos like it is today.
Lox,
but lox was a big deal. No? You didn't have lox every Sunday, right?
At a bris.
You know what I'm saying? It was an event. You know what I'm saying? There's a caterer that was providing it. Yeah? So the bottom line, yeah, right, lox. I remember as a kid, like what you had to do to get extra piece of lox and look left and right and hope that nobody noticed you took an extra one, right? My kid, I put lox on the table by Shalash Shittis, like, I'm not really in the mood. I told my wife, I think I failed as a father. I literally put lox on the table, my kid's like, yeah, I'm not really in the mood. That would never have happened when I was a kid. Yeah? But the bottom line is farm salmon is available year round. They grow it, particularly Chile is the best because Chile never has a winter. Even the winter is not really winter. Besides the fact that they're 6 months off, but they have a moderate enough climate, they're able to grow it year-round. So the bottom line is farm salmon is available year-round, wild salmon is available 2 months of the year, July and August. Some places, like the tip of September, you're gonna get it, then what you're getting the rest of the year is all frozen. It was pulled out of the water, they froze it, and they ship it out the rest of the year. So the bottom line is, there's no non-kosher fish that looks like salmon.
What's the problem?
Bugs? They're at begging bugs. I didn't say any bugs.
Isn't that the skin though? Meaning the back that you froze?
That is the skin. I would have thought it was fine without the skin, but yes, that is the skin.
So without the skin, it's possible to tell if there was seen steel.
Yeah, theoretically.
I couldn't see the
difference. You might not notice the difference. Yeah. Let's say you don't notice the difference. What's the problem?
No.
They're both kosher anyways.
Oh,
they're all kosher.
I said there is no non-kosher
fish that looks like this. None.
I see. So the guy was trying to disprove you with a kosher fish.
Right. Oh, that's what he...
Okay.
He wanted to say that. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what see is. I said, are you kidding me? There's a lot of things you can say about me. You want to tell me I don't know how you can have that conversation, but I'm telling you I don't know if it's CS that hurt. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To calling me a Mets fan. You know what I'm saying? There's certain things you just can't do to a guy. You can't do that.
Yeah. Why don't you cut the whitefish that opened? It used to be that it was closed. Now they cut it open.
All right, the rings on the whitefish. You ready? Here's a story like this. The good old-fashioned Hamish whitefish. Hungarians especially were busy with this. You cut the whitefish when you serve it at a simcha especially. You know what gefilte fish really means? It means stuffed. Yeah? Gefilte is stuffed. Now, where'd it come from? You gotta know the history on these things. So what happens is you get a piece of whitefish. What they would do is they would cut a whole fish like this. What we do is we cut the meat like this along the sides, called a fillet. The whole meat in one shot on the other side, right? What they did was they cut like this, perpendicular through, but without taking the guts out. So if you cut through like this, you get beautiful rings and the skin's at the bottom. Now, if you serve it on a plate, it looks pretty, except that there's a big gaping hole over there. So what you do is you make gefilte fish, you stuff that in the middle, and you cook it. So now it's a nice oval piece. It looks very nice on a plate, blah, blah, blah. Some people got wise and said, you know what? This gefilte fish stuff ain't bad. It takes care of the burrow problems on Shabbos. Let's just serve the gefilte fish, right? And thus the gefilte fish industry was born. But the idea behind those rings on the whitefish was that it looks pretty, and that's the way we always did it, so let's do it like that. But the problem is that we know that there are regularly worms in the guts of the fish. Now, the OU, let's go to your question first. As a rule, the OU doesn't worry about bugs and fish. We don't worry about the bugs and the fish. A scandal here, a scandal here.
COVID
times going crazy. I think I heard about it. Fake news. That was before we had a thing called fake news. We had to be great at everything. Bottom line is, there's something to talk about. Our poskim felt that there's nothing to worry about, and that Shulchan Aruch seemed to deal with it. It sure looked like the case of Shulchan Aruch to us, which the Shulchan Aruch says the favorite is mutter. The guys who were worried about it said, maybe it's a different worm, and it's not the same way as Shulchan Aruch, and there was caches, and they thought they had riots this way, that. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, but bottom line is, we went with what it seems to say in Shulchan Aruch, which is that fish is mutter. You don't have to worry about the worms, because minei kagavli, that's the expression of Chazal, that it grew in the fish, became a part of the fish, however you want to understand the lumdus of it. The problem is we're all masking that there's worms in parts of the fish that would be a problem. Worms in the head are a problem. Because if it's worms in the head, we assume that it came in b'chutz. It went up the nose, it went through the ear, whatever it is. Worms in the head, we're generally speaking worried about that. Unless we know for a fact that it's not worms that came up the nose through the ear. The worms in the gut, we're afraid the fish swallowed it. If it swallowed it, then it didn't grow in the fish. He swallowed it. If he took it off my hook, you're not going to say that it's magically going to become mutter because he swallowed it before I killed him. Right? Whatever's found in the guts of the fish isn't mutter. Yeah. So if you find worms in the stomach of a fish, which usually those are parasitic worms, right? So it ate some shrimp or something that had a parasite in it, and now the parasite says, ha ha, and it's eating its way through the fish. That would potentially be a problem. Now, white fish are particularly prone to those gut parasites. If you know what you're doing and you're able to cut it well, you could cut the rings through by cutting around the stomach. You cut it open, you yank the whole sac out, and clean it out, and cut the pieces, and you're good to go. The problem is if a guy doesn't know how to cut the fish properly, yeah, he cuts it, he just takes the fish, goes ch-ch-ch. He cut the stomach, released whatever parasitic worms were hanging out over there, and now when he washes, it doesn't help, because the worm managed to get lucky and dig his way back into the flesh, and you're eating an absolutely usser worm. So that's why a lot of places stopped doing it, because they weren't so sure that every guy that was going to cut the fish in their store took out the gut the right way. So that's why they just stopped bothering with it. Make sense? I mean, you hear. It wasn't worth it that much to have the extra piece of skin at the bottom.
It's a $12 upgrade on
it. It is. It's an upgrade.
No joke.
Is that dangerous as well?
Dangerous health-wise. Okay, that's a good question, too. So like this. In the United States, there is no law. You know what? Now we have to talk about that, too. Yeah. There's no law that you have to freeze your fish or cook it. There's no law. It's a recommendation, but it's not the law. In Canada, you may not sell raw fish like sushi unless it's deep frozen first. That's the law. Why? Because if you don't deep freeze your fish, whatever parasites may be living in there are going to be living in you. Fair's fair. If there's any parasites in it, you will know about it shortly. It will not take long. Yeah? There will not be a 6-month investigation. It will be a matter of a couple of hours and then a trip to the emergency room. Not a joke. So I heard somebody saying once before, like guys who eat sushi regularly, especially at exotic places, dumb aberration. I don't know what they're thinking, but whatever, you know, you're literally trusting a guy with your life that he took proper care of the fish, bought it from a guy who was reputable, who took good care of the fish to make sure it didn't get infected or infested with something. But if it would not be cooked properly, it would live to tell about it, and it would be a problem. Some fish, even when you freeze it, they don't always deep freeze something well enough. Right, so every so often I get a picture of black cod from Costco, not under the OU. Black cod from Costco, they sell fresh fish over there. A guy tells me a picture of the black cod with a nice geschmack of worm wiggling its way all around over there. Live, on camera, you know. Guy caught it and he's so proud of himself. And people send it to me like, oh, you're not going to believe what I found. So you want to know it, honestly? I had a company in British Columbia that wanted to make a hot smoked black cod fillet. And I told them that in order to approve it, we had to make sure that it was necha kumo shuchai before they cooked it. So I told them they had to mail a sample. She mailed me a sample, and there was a big fat worm living right on top. I said, how are you talking? How do you live with that? She goes, before we sell it, we make sure to yank all the worms out. We're sending it to you. Who cares? I love people like that. I said, let me just ask you a question. Did my sugar call you? I'm just curious. Never. So the bottom line is, if you freeze it well, you would take care of it. If you cook it well, you're also good. If you're eating sushi from a guy who's not so worried if you're going to be a repeat customer, you're on your own. You're not going to deep freeze it in your house.
I see. Okay, that's not a thing. All right.
You have a refrigerator. You have a freezer in your house.
It's not a deep freezer.
No. Right. I'll prove it. You ever try to make ice cream in your freezer?
I haven't, but okay.
You get the idea. Yeah. You're not going to just take it, put it in an ice cream tray, and shove it in the freezer, and it's going to come out ice cream. It's not going to freeze fast enough, cold enough. Your freezer is set to, 20-something degrees, something like that. Deep freezer is going to be below zeros. You're not going to manufacture it at home. Okay. I'm going to talk about one more thing. Two more things. I'm going to take questions. All right. So for those of you who buy sushi, you might buy something like this. Dynasty. These are Serene products. You saw this? Fake crab. Imitation crab. Oh. I say Serene, you're like, what? You know the stuff in the California roll? Oh, that stuff! I love that stuff! Fake crab. Connie, whatever you like. Fake crab. Here's the story. This stuff is so kosher sensitive, it's really ridiculous. It's expensive. He's giving you a good deal when he sells it. He's selling it for $7 a pound for pollock, which all it is pollock, and it's minced up and they do stuff to it. What they do is they take fish, they wash the protein out of it, they cook it up, blend it with the ingredients. It's a two-stage cooking process in order to put the stuff together, form it, flavor it, and then he's got to cook it again with all the other mishigasa. The problem is non-kosher crab, and everybody has to make it in a non-kosher factory in Kasher, because nobody can afford to do the amount of volume to keep an entire factory running kosher all the time. The non-kosher stuff is made with real crab. You ever heard such a thing? If I would tell you something has imitation grape juice in it, right? What percentage of real grape juice do you think would be in there? Right? Zero. Right? Yeah. Did you ever hear something a guy says before? It's fake. Right? It's an Armani suit. It's not really an Armani suit. What percentage of those do you think are really Armani suits? You say, okay, I'll take your word on it. When they say it's fake imitation crab, if you read the ingredients on non-kosher fake crab, it says like 2% fake crab, 4% fake crab. Fake crab. It's one of the ingredients they put in there. No joke. It's called fake, and in order to get it have a good, authentic fake taste, they add the real stuff to it.
What's the real name again?
Surimi. Yeah. They even say it on crab flavor surimi seafood flakes. Yeah? So basically, it's meant to look like crab. I don't know if it tastes like crab or not. I have no idea
what
crab's
supposed to.
It doesn't?
That's what they say.
Okay, I don't know.
I asked.
You asked. Yeah. You're also curious. I didn't have anyone know.
Oh my gosh.
Not even close. All right, but it looks like it. And for us, it's close enough. Listen, you got the ones shaped like shrimp and stuff. Oh, gaval, they're grabbing shrimp for dinner. I told my kids we're having shrimp for dinner. None of my kids were interested in it after that. You know, if I said, hey, look, we got fake fish. Ooh, fake fish. I love fake fish. You know, we're eating shrimp? Isn't that trade? Really? Neat. Kosher, trust me. The OU, I don't trust the OU. Anyhow, so
it's a chav cake.
Yeah, right. There's a chav cake product. Yeah, my daughter did that to me once. I used to do presentations about other topics. So I used to speak about going to ShopRite, for example, and buying products. And right next to a kosher one is a treif one. It looks very similar. So I bought a bunch of cereal, and I told my family, don't touch the cereal on top of the fridge because some of it's treif, and it's for my presentation tomorrow. So one day my daughter says to my wife, she goes, she wants to know who bought the cereal today. I said, who bought the cereal? What's the difference? She goes, because Tati buys treif cereal and I want to eat kosher. So she wanted to know, did mommy buy the cereal? Did Tati buy the cereal? Like, this is great. You know, this is wonderful what the OU is doing to me. So the bottom line is something like this, you got to be very careful with it. And Mamela, that's going to bring me to the sushi. Out of towners ask this question much more than in town to say, especially because in town, who needs it? Can we buy sushi at a non-kosher restaurant? Rabbi, what's the big deal? All right, so let's go through it. All right, so the first most important ingredient, what bracha do you make on sushi? Mizonos, right? Pashal. Why do you make mizonos? I make mizonos on it. Rehershachem told me the same thing. Plus you make mizonos. Why? Because rice is the main ingredient. It's the main ingredient. Okay, so let's say you would go with that. Rice is the main ingredient. How do you make rice? You take raw rice and you cook it, right? Okay, rice, which is raw, is not edible. When you cook it, it's oil shochem alachem. Those are the big two that make it bishalakum when it's cooked by an anju. That's a problem. Again, assuming that you care about mitzvahs d'rabbanan, you probably shouldn't want to be eating bishalakum. Mainly, if you buy this at a non-kosher restaurant, probably the non-kosher restaurant didn't have mashgiach tamidi turn on the fire in the back, so imagine that it's bishalakum rice. That's number one. Number two, then there's fish in there. Some of you buy the sushi because of the fish, right? Okay, so the fish didn't have any skin on it. Yeah? There's no skin, so you can't
Hold up, check.
Yeah, by a salmon.
All right, so let's say you would have salmon. Even the salmon roll is usually seasoned, often seasoned. So if it's seasoned, now you gotta know what stuff they put in it. And one of the things that they love to put in it, both into the rice and into the seafood, into the vegetables and into the salmon sometimes, is vinegar. A lot of times that's wine vinegar. Even the white rice wine vinegar sometimes is mixed with red wine vinegar. Which is tamino. That I don't know. Could be, I don't know. That's possible. The nori sheet, that seaweed that they wrap around inside over there. Okay, so that's made out of seaweed. Now seaweed has this wonderful thing that it grows in the sea, and it's a nice piece of brush that's just wiggling around over there. And small shrimps and seahorses use it for camouflage. Okay. Then the big harvester comes in to go harvest it all up, and somehow they didn't get the eviction notice that they're supposed to get out of the way because they didn't deliver it in the right language or whatever it is. And they stick around, and they get harvested. And if you don't get a guy who removes those little shrimps and seahorses, all that happens is you get flat shrimps and seahorses. So every so often, if you looked at a non-toasted nori sheet, you can see a little of a shrimp or seahorse that was, right? Smacked flat. That's a problem, because a flat seahorse is still a seahorse. It's not good. If you could see that he's got not much of a smile on his face anymore, that's a problem. You don't want to eat that. So you got to make sure they took care of that. The other thing is that, Daniel Berlin from Sushi Metsuyan told me that a lot of the times the guys who make nori, they also toast the nori with seasonings, including shrimp powder and chicken powder. That's a very popular thing that he found, which was a headache to him because he's trying to get kosher nori sheets. He's got to go find a guy who doesn't do that. So apparently that was very much on his mind, told me to share that with you. So the vegetables are brined in the vinegar. The rice has its own vinegar besides the bishlaka problem. The fish, you have the various fish problems. The soy sauce is fermented. It's fermented product. It's often made on the same equipment with oyster sauce. For those of you who aren't aware, oysters are not kosher. The cane that make them are not going to be kosher. Maybe you got to dish the soy sauce. So you're left after you throw all that away with an empty plastic container, which if you really wanted to eat it, I would recommend that you wash it with soap and water before you do, because it touched on kosher sushi. So if you wanted to go out shopping for non-kosher sushi, all you're going to get is the plastic tray once you wash it. Shkoyach!